Talk Friday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. Great to be with you today again, Paul, even if it is, as I note on the calendar, Friday the 13th.
Yes, well, I took all kinds of chances already. I'm wearing shorts and sub-zero weather.
I noticed that.
I tried to wear those until October sometime. And I had to drive from Story City on Highway 69, where all the deer are just lying in wait for me.
There you go.
And so far, Friday the 13th hasn't kicked in, he said as he stumbled out the door.
You know, I'm not superstitious, but the one thing I do avoid doing, not just on Friday the 13th, is looking in the mirror in the morning because I'm afraid of what I'll see.
Well, that person I see in the mirror has been a stranger for about 10 years.
Well, thanks for joining us, everybody, on this Friday the 13th. And, Paul, we have a really big show in the works today, as Ed Sullivan used to say, including a summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. And we did indeed have some big news in Ames this week.
Well, then later, Mary Rankin will join us, and she's the Director of Sustainability at Iowa State University and Sustainability Coordinator for the City of Ames. She'll talk about an exciting new program that Ames residents can take part in.
But first, we are happy to welcome back again Ames Mayor John Hala, who joined us last week to talk about the $29 million Healthy Life Center bond measure that was on the ballot this past Tuesday. And as you know, city voters rejected it. So the mayor has kindly come back to talk about what happened and what's next. Mayor Hala, welcome back again to Local Talk.
Happy to be here again, Paul and Dennis.
So in a summary, what went wrong?
What went wrong?
In
terms of why did it not pass?
Yes.
Oh, I'm not going to speculate from the standpoint that that really be me guessing what other people's decisions were. I think there's a variety of reasons that people decided to not support it. But I think that the way I'm looking at it is we respect the voters' decision, and so we need to move on and move in a different direction. But I think you talk to a variety of people, they're going to share with you that there are specific reasons, you know, why. So I spent a lot of time, you know, thinking through that.
Mm-hmm. We should say that it needed 60% voter approval,
correct.
$29 million bond issue to help fund a $49 million Healthy Life Center. It received 48.5%. About 8,000 voters went out, 17% voted.
Yeah, a very good turnout.
A
yes.
good turnout, mm-hmm. yeah.
So actually, people were motivated to vote. And, you know, I love that kind of activity, really, because, number one, we had the leader of the opposition on a Friday before
mm-hmm,
you came.
Correct.
He made a strong case. You made a strong case. And, you know, often in our personal lives as well as our civic lives, it's rarely a choice between camping on the cliff and jumping off of it. The choices are always nuanced and complicated, and mm-hmm. people fairly can have different opinions on the same issue. And so that's what we have to keep in mind when we repair any bridges that might have been burned, because basically it's a question of everyone having an opinion that was based on their own feelings about this, and there's a winner and a loser in any kind of issue like this. And so how do you continue to live together and move forward? And my question, John, is, you know, the coalition of people who put this together, the
mm-hmm. yep.
Heartland Senior Services and Mary Greeley, I'm just wondering if that coalition still exists that might be employed to come up with some Plan B things.
Well, that's a great question, Paul. And one of the comments I made at one of the events I was at here last couple of days is that one of the things that I see as being a real positive outcome is that there are some significant bridges built between the hospital, the county, the Heart and Senior Services Board, Medical Center, DMAC, Iowa State, and the city. And you just can't put a value on that from the standpoint of going forward. Maybe it's not this project, maybe it's a different project, but relationships were established, they were strengthened. I think that everyone understands that there is a common vision to make Ames even better, to strengthen it. But in terms of this particular concept or vision, as we talked about last week, you know, on the air, this was a one opportunity, because for three and a half years, Mary Greeley Medical Center, the city, Heartland Senior Services has pushed pause. They've held off doing anything on their facilities, either building new ones or adding on to or renovating their existing ones. And so to go back to the drawing board, one, I think you would have to slice an awful lot out to – and that would really – it would destroy or cripple the vision of what I was trying to accomplish. You got to cut square footage. You're going to have to take out amenities. So that's the first thing. Secondly is we don't know if the voters would support even a reduced size project without going through and doing some significant due diligence and some triage, so to speak, you know, going back and analyzing it. And the needs of the constituents at the hospital and Heart and Senior Services in particular, those continue to grow. And so consequently, they need to move on. So the partners have I've checked with several of them, and they just said, yeah, we need to move forward. And I think it was also mentioned, you know, in the media by, you know, Nancy Carroll, they need to go ahead and move on as well, too, because it takes several years of planning, additional fundraising in order to try and get a plan put in place. Then you have the construction as well. So even for a smaller project, you could be 2-3 years down the path. And then if we would go back to a bond issue again and they said no, that could be even farther down the road. So it's we're all going to move in a different direction, but we're going to move forward positively.
Did the vote surprise you? You had mentioned last week that you were cautiously optimistic.
Guardedly optimistic, yes.
Guardedly optimistic. Yes. And on election night, it needed 60 and it didn't even get 50. And there had been a big push by the city, a lot of meetings, and I attended one at the library in the weeks before.
Actually, by the Heartland, I mean the Friends of Heartland.
Right.
Yeah, not – there were city staff there, but also other people there, but yes.
So what I saw in the meetings and in talking to other people was that the audience there was not – they had questions about the Healthy Life Center. And among the questions, it's too expensive. We don't need some of the amenities there. Did the vote itself getting less than 50%, did that surprise you there on Tuesday night?
I think a little bit. And one is, I'm certainly pleased that so many people chose to go to the polls. This was a, it was less than 20%, but it was like 17% and change, which in my mind is really a positive sign. What was interesting is that there's 46,000 odd voters in Ames. Well, you know, a lot of those are college students.
Right.
And so consequently, if you were to remove most of the college students, presuming that a lot of them probably didn't vote in a, you know, a bond issue, that percentage of actual adults or adults 18 and older that are registered to vote, a lot turned out to vote in the election. And so we got a good response from the community in terms of this particular issue. Now, in terms of the getting less than 50%, it was – based on our my conversations with people in the community, I certainly had more than 50% of the people that indicated they were very supportive and excited about the concept. However, in my former life, practicing as a in a design profession, we went through an awful lot of bond issues with school districts, counties, and cities, and it was very common to not hear much from people who were against a project. They just felt they didn't want to talk about it, or they just had their opinion, and whatever their opinion was, that's the decision that they made, and they moved forward. And so there are some bond issues that passed by the skin of their teeth, some that lost, by a small margin. The worst one that I was ever involved with was we were not asked to help them. I'd asked them to help them, and they lost by 2 votes. That one really hurt. It's a little surprising that it didn't hit 50%. That was probably two quote surprises. One was, and I was pleased with that. One is good turnout.
Yeah.
That was, I think people were, there was some surprise on that, which could be a harbinger of, it's going to be it could be a significant swing one way or the other, which it was, and two was not getting half the people to support that, which seemed to belie, or it was surprising from the standpoint that wasn't the sense that we had, and that's probably contributed to the disappointment that people had.
One more quick note, and I know Paul has a lot of questions as well. I was at the city council meeting, as you know, Tuesday night, and the gentleman behind me before the meeting started was talking to a friend, and talking about the vote. And we had all heard that 4,000 people had already voted, and we thought, well, that's quite a turnout. It may be that that's in favor of the Healthy Life Center. But he said something that surprised me. He said, And I don't, to his friend, I don't know of anybody who's voting against it. And I thought, well, then you're not talking to a lot of people out there, are you? Because I've gone to meetings where a lot of people are against this. Mm-hmm. So there was a bubble there among those who had written the letters to the paper in favor of it. All of them were in favor of it, but a lot of people obviously were not.
Yes, and no disagreement. And I think what's the other thing is that sometimes, and this is not uncommon, and that is a lot of times the questions and concerns don't arise early on, and so consequently it's a little more difficult to try and, you know, respond. Certainly, in terms of, well, we're concerned about the size of the project. Well, it's been talked about for nigh on almost 3 years. The project size has been about, you know, where it's at. I'm not being critical. I'm just saying is that at the point where it goes ready to go to a bond issue, it's impossible to go ahead and change that because language has been adopted. But there were concerns, I think, with the size of the project, and there were some other operational, you know, concerns. And some of them, I think, were potentially inaccurate assumptions. But again, as we talked last week, as long as people have the facts and make their decision based on facts, then they just decide they weren't supportive of it.
Well, of course, nothing happens in a vacuum. And you've talked about, in your profession, I'm sure you dealt with all kinds of bond issues in smaller communities where schools were at issue or any kind of expansion. And I was just going to the recent bond issue up in Roland Story School District where I live. And, of course, we had the outlet mall that was defunct, and it was an eyesore along the interstate.
Yep.
And the school folks thought, well, let's purchase that land and build a big athletic complex, football field and track, and it was a beautifully designed thing, and they had all kinds of videos in support of that. And that was a big issue up there. We had a big voter turnout for that, too. And Roland Story, although there's a large elderly population, these folks have always supported bond issues regarding the school because they recognize that people coming up with young children now, even though their children were grown and adults, deserve something that they would have had, you know, if they were a young person now raising a family. But we had just had a bond issue for a new swimming pool and some other things. And so on top of that, my perception was that people thought this was a bridge too far. So I'm wondering if in this bond issue here, on the heels of the bond issue for the new high school and that sort of thing, if you think that was a factor in people's choices.
Well, that's a good comparative question. I think one of the factors, and Dennis, you asked that, you know, early on, is what were some of the issues. Thinking that we just passed a $110 million new bond issue for a high school, there were no increases in the taxes on that. And I think that was one of the factors is that, you know, on one hand you say, well, we're leveraging $20 million of contributions, whether they were direct contributions from individuals or they were contributions from entities. But it's still going to be $44 per $100,000 of assessed valuation. So for let's just take it easy math. It was if your house is worth $250, it's going to be, you know, another $100, you know, a year in taxes. Plus you're going to have to pay, you know, user fees as well too. So so I think that there was, you know, am I pushed to the point where that's just, you know, too much? And the other thing is it more facility than what we want to really support for our community? And I think it's a matter of perception and also a matter of understanding what the vision was and what they want to be supportive of. So
this is all 2020 hindsight, but that's what we're dealing with 3 days after the election, and that's fair, I think. Yesterday in the Ames Trib, your city manager, Steve Shanker, was saying that on the basis of the vote, it's fair to wonder whether there is a need in the community in terms of voters' minds for a warm water pool, because that was one of the big pushes for this Healthy Life Center. There were several swimming pools involved in that, as well as several basketball courts. So that's the question. Is there a need in the community's mind for a multi-million-dollar warm water pool? Isn't that up for grabs in terms of the answer on that one?
I agree 100% with our city manager. The it was made very clear that the shortfall in the operational costs was directly attributed to the pool operation. Indoor swimming pools are very expensive to operate and very expensive to maintain from a equipment operationally. Windows, roof, vapor pressure, the home, everything. There's a lot that goes into them. And so if we were to take and just pick up the design, I'm not saying we are, but if we were to pick up that design and just move it over for just the pool alone, there's going to be a similar cash shortfall, or we'll have to levy even higher user fees in order to access that. And so I believe, council hasn't even met, obviously, before,
right.
since Tuesday night's vote. But we have to ask the question, we're building a new competitive pool, cold water pool at the high school.
Yeah.
So that need is going to be met in terms of the aquatics program from that standpoint. Will the community support before we go out and spend a significant amount of money to go out and do design concepts, site selection, and involve a lot of people's time to evaluate it? Will the community support that? This is me personally speaking. I believe our community does need and would be supportive of two pool basins, a warm water one where you're going to have – where you can do swim lessons year-round, where you can do lap swimming where you don't want a cold water basin, and also for fun and for attraction. But that's a question we're going to have to go out and make sure that we understand what the answer is before a lot of time and effort is being invested back into it. And I can't answer that question at this point. I like to think the answer is yes, but...
Well, once again, going back to Story City, wasn't too long ago that we put in this new aquatic pool.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the old pool had run its course anyway. But this was a more elaborate, more fun place with slides and all kinds of gizmos that are modern. And the people in city government said, Paul, that's going to be a loss leader for us.
Mm-hmm.
We're always going to be pouring money into this because, as you pointed out, maintenance of these facilities is always a deficit spending situation. The fees and everything will never support that. But then I thought about that. I thought, at what price quality of life? Right now, with that new complex and the pool in Story City, a small town where kids can pedal around all day and they can walk to the pool and spend most of the day there, and they're not on their screens,
mm-hmm.
So that's a real quality of life issue. And you're always going to be a financial loss leader, but look at the dividends.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so that's where you have to look at that. And, when you look at the problems of rural Iowa and shrinking economies and populations, we have to remind ourselves that Story City, Ames, we're part of the Golden Circle, where all of the issues are built around growth, not deficit
right.
of population. There are blessings here that we're talking about how to handle growth,
Agreed. And I'm trying to believe council, staff, I certainly think the way is what's best for the community. And I think we have to look at the fact that we have to – there's a price to pay. We have to invest in our community, and it's going to – maybe it's something that you and I wouldn't even use. But the point is it good for the overall health of the community, for the development of all ages, versus is it just something that I'm going to not be using? And I am not saying – that people who voted, who didn't support the Healthy Life Center, just had that, I don't want to do it. I mean, I respect the fact that they have their own various reasons for not supporting that. But I do hope that we can really evaluate what is best for this community. And it's the same for schools. And as you mentioned, Paul, I think a lot of people who do not have grade school or high school children anymore do support the school because they recognize mm-hmm. the importance of education. And then to what extent beyond that in terms of quality of life, amenities, do we need to have in order to provide a richness and a fullness in our community?
Now, you have said you'd like to make sure next time that there is support for another proposal, if there is another proposal. Mm-hmm. How would you do that? Would you be putting a poll in the field of eligible voters? And secondly, was that done before this particular bond issue?
We put out an annual survey, a city survey, that is sent out randomly to I'm not sure exactly how Susan Gwiazda and Iowa State go ahead and generate the addresses, but it goes out, and I forget how many, how many thousand, are sent out in the mail. Maybe it's 1,000, 2,000. I'm probably quoting the wrong number. But then statistically, the number we get back, certainly there's people that, forget about it or gets, put on the counter, and it's lost. The challenge that I see, and it's a very good question, because I've already been thinking, how are we going to do this? Because there was over 4,000 people who said no to the project.
Right.
So how do we capture, out of respect for privacy, and we don't know who voted yes or no, and that's immaterial. But the point, how do you capture that sentiment and really understand what would they support? We could try and send out a survey. Well, will we get statistically back just people who are supportive of
right.
it and not
right.
get people back? Because the point is, they might say, well, they might be tracking me, so to speak, they know that they sent it out to my address and I didn't send it back. Well, we don't, because you can be anonymous in that situation. We could do polling. I think it's going to be – there's people that are much more qualified than I am to comment. How can you get statistically accurate samplings to make sure that people are going to be supportive? Mm-hmm. And that, I'm sure, will be a topic that staff is going to be mulling over and maybe getting some people's feedback to make sure. Because, no one wants to go through this whole process. And elections are expensive. We have to pay to go through that process as well, too. But also the loss component is time, and time is
right.
worth money too.
Right.
Well, I really think that, number one, people who've been involved on either side of this issue have to, in the tradition of democracy, forgive those who oppose them.
Agreed.
And say, look at what's ahead, and whatever we have as feelings about what happened or various incidents or opinions that were expressed, that's water under the bridge. So what comes next? And I like the idea that there's a regular survey of this town.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, you have the option of responding or not. But at least the government of the city is reaching out for feedback and guidance. The two issues about government are, is it transparent mm-hmm. and is it responsive?
Right.
And so we're doing all the right things about inquiring what the needs are. And everyone worked together to come up with this proposal of the Healthy Life Center. And if that's rejected, then we move on, and then we look at what can be done given the needs of the community that we perceive need to be met.
I appreciate that. And I just, as we get close to the end of our time, one thing I want to really stress is that your point is we need to, the decisions are made, we move on. We are an outstanding community. And I want to lead. Council wants to lead. We want to encourage it. Okay, there's no victory dances,
right.
and there's no despondency or hey, shame on you for not supporting this. We had the privilege to vote, and I believe that people in our community want the best for our community. We got to move forward on that. Let's find out what everyone. Or at least 60% of the people vote. I would love to see something have like the 80-some percent, pass rate that we had on the high school. And that just really sends a strong message. So the point is that I am not going down that path. I don't think that council is going down that path saying, well, we got an issue or a fracture. I don't think there is a fracture. I think there's a disagreement. Mm-hmm. We have to agree to be disagreeable, but also say we're moving forward in a positive direction for the community.
Mayor John Hala, who's looking at the clock as we are out of time. Would you come back and join us again next month?
I would be honored to do that.
We would love to have you back. Ames Mayor John Hala talking today, as he did last week, about the Healthy Life Center, the proposal that went down on Tuesday with the bond issue. Now, don't go away. Up next, here on Local Talk, the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
And after that, Mary Rankin takes the guest seat here. She's involved in everything having to do with sustainability. And today she'll talk about a new program that you can take part in. With more of Local Talk Friday on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. It's 27 minutes after the hour on this Friday. Time for our weekly rundown now of news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. And, of course, the big story in Ames this past week was the one we have just been talking with Mayor John Hala about, that voters rejected the $29 million bond issue for the Healthy Life Center in Tuesday's election. Bond issue needed 60% voter approval, got 48.5%. Other news as well. Last week on Saturday, the Trib reported that Democrat Ross Wilburn of Ames had been sworn into the Iowa House of Representatives in a ceremony at the state capitol on Friday. Wilburn had run unopposed in a special election in August in Iowa House District 46 after incumbent Lisa Heddens resigned and was appointed to the Story County Board of Supervisors. And there was word last Saturday that several Ames police officers had stood on the roof at the Dunkin' Donut shop in Ames on Friday, on the roof, as part of the annual Cop on a Roof event to raise money for Special Olympics Iowa. The idea was for the officers to encourage anyone walking or driving by to go in and make a donation. Sunday's paper had a report about the third annual Pride Fest celebration in downtown Ames. More than 50 vendors showed up, and there was live music and entertainment. Sunday's paper also had word about the new director of equity in the Ames School District. He's Anthony Jones. He started his new position in July after previously serving in the district in a variety of other roles. Tuesday's paper reported on Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders' latest visit to Ames. Took place on Sunday when the Vermont senator told young people attending his rally to get active in next year's political process and, in his words, start a revolution. Also word Tuesday that a Nevada woman had been arrested in connection with a series of burglaries at an Ames apartment complex. 32-year-old Carrie Papillion was taken into custody at an Ames laundromat. And there was a report about the Great Ames Adventure Race that had taken place Sunday at Ada Hayden Park. About 80 racers took part in the competition, which included a 3-mile kayak and canoe race, followed by a 15-mile bike race, and concluding with a 5K run. And no, Paul Wearson and I were not there. Wednesday brought word we could have biked. Wednesday brought word that the former Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurant at Lincoln Way and Clark in Ames had been torn down to make room for a new Starbucks. The building that used to be next to KFC, Taco Time, was also demolished. The existing Starbucks is at 327 Lincoln Way. It's supposed to be removed as part of a future mixed-use development, but the Chicago development company that expressed an interest in building that one has never submitted site development plans to the city of Ames. And there was word that the United Way of Story County, planning its annual Day of Caring, which takes place today, Friday. The campaign involves hundreds of volunteers who have registered to work at 41 projects around the county. Yesterday, the Trib reported that the Ames School Board had heard plans for upcoming renovations at Mitchell Elementary. That project will cost an estimated $3 million and start sometime next year. Also word that the Story County Board of Supervisors had unanimously voted to extend a job offer for the vacant Director of External Operations position in a county administrator from Minnesota, his name Eric Christensen. That position became vacant when Deb Shildroth accepted the position of Ames Assistant City Manager in June. One more story of note from yesterday, those new blackout license plates that drivers can buy, they're sold out here in Story County, but never fear. Next shipment of new plates should arrive in a couple of weeks. Today's paper has word that an Ames teenager faces 62 years in prison after pleading guilty yesterday for his role in a home invasion in Kelly, where an elderly woman was assaulted last year. 17-year-old Lewis Cruz and two others were charged with the break-in at the home where an 82-year-old woman was beaten. Cruz has agreed to testify against the other two defendants, who are 18 and 20 years old. Also today, a report that dozens of firefighters from 14 local agencies climbed the 230-foot tower at the Verbio ethanol plant in Nevada on Wednesday to pay tribute to firefighters who died in the 9/11 attacks in New York City in 2001. Also a story today that the new flyover ramp from northbound I-35 to westbound Highway 30 here in Ames opened yesterday morning. And, of course, there were several stories about tomorrow's big Iowa State University-Iowa football game, which by now everyone in the world, at least everyone in this part of the world, must know, starts at 3 o'clock at Jack Trice Stadium. And one more note, and this one from our Local Talk Friday friend and colleague Maggie Westvold, who is taking the day off today. but who wanted me to remind everyone that Third Stanza Poets going to present music and readings this coming Monday night, starting at 6:30 at Cafe Diem on Main Street here in Ames. Among the readers, Linda Voigt of Madison, Wisconsin, who helped start this Third Stanza annual tradition of readings as part of what's called 11 Days of Global Peace and Unity. So, Paul, tomorrow at the football game, Jack Trice Stadium, lots of people going to be there. Game day, ESPN going to be there. It's a big deal.
Well, I can't afford the tickets. I think scalp prices are up over $200. And, you know, I'm going to be ensconced in front of a big screen TV where I don't have to stand in line to go to the bathroom, and I can eat anything I want. I can nod off during commercials. This is really living, okay? But God bless all the folks that are brave and be at the stadium.
You bet.
It's going to be a nice sunny day, idyllic. Game day is coming from
ESPN. Kirk Herbstreit.
What do you want in Ames?
Reese Davis.
You know?
Hey, people are going to start lining up. Apparently, they can start lining up at 3:30 tomorrow morning to see the game day broadcast. I don't think I'd get up at 3:30 to go see a game day broadcast.
I'd
call
have
me
to
crazy.
Be carried into that event.
I thought you were going to buy me a $200 ticket, by the way. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune, as well as commentary from Paul and me. When we come back, Mary Rankin will be in the guest seat with word on something new for you.
Welcome back to more of Local Talk Friday on KHOI Community Radio. Joining us now is Mary Rankin, who's always busy because she wears two professional hats. She's Iowa State University's Sustainability Director, as well as the Sustainability Coordinator for the City of Ames. And she's brought along a guest to talk about a new venture in the city. Mary, it's yours.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Great, Mary. And gosh, in addition to our guest whom you're going to introduce, I have a garbage can in front of me. Wow, that's amazing. It's green. It's big and green.
It's a composting bin. Let's not get that confused. Oh, my goodness. No, we don't want garbage to go into this. And yes, we thought a prop would be very helpful for our listeners today. What do you think?
I think it's great. You have to visualize this. It's green. It's about, a foot, maybe a little more than a foot high. And it's sitting between me and Bill.
Good morning.
And you're going to tell us all about this.
Yes, and I should introduce my guest. Excuse me. My apologies. Bill Schmidt is with me today. He's the superintendent for our Resource Recovery Center here in our lovely Ames community. And the prop that you have in front of you, it's a square. I think, Bill, it's 4.1 gallon to be exact.
Yep, that is correct.
A bucket with a lid on it and a compostable bag
in
it.
It's big and green. Just big and green.
And all over it are stickers that mention what it can be used for. And so, Bill, can you tell us a little bit about this program? We gave our listeners a hint of it last month, but
sure.
I want to talk about it in more detail.
Sure, I'd be glad to. We rolled out a program a little over a year ago for backyard composting, and it's been well received. I have a lot of people put in composting barrels or systems or pallets in their backyard and doing their own backyard composting. But we had a number of people approach us and said, that's a great program. We'd like to participate, keep the organics, the food waste out of the waste stream, but we live in an apartment, or we live in a townhome, or our homeowners association won't allow that. What can we do? And we kind of put our heads together and thought about options that would work for people living in that type of situation. And we came up with a, as Mary said, a pail here that people can utilize to put their food waste into with a lid that snaps down nice and tight on it to keep most of the smells inside. And then they can bring that to us or to the yard waste site. And then they'll take it, and we take it to an industrial composting site where they can compost it and turn it into usable material rather than just putting it into a landfill and having it turn into methane.
Well, it looks like it's lined with a plastic liner, but that isn't really is that something that will also compost that material?
Yes, that's a very good point.
So even though it
point.
Looks like plastic, it's going to die like everything else and go into the compost.
It's going to go through the normal, decomposition process and be made into wonderful material that then we can use instead of some of those synthetic chemicals.
Well,
that
you sound like a funeral director.
The wonderful
decomposition process.
Well, now, a lot of people might be asking, okay, and I've got this thing right in front of me. I'm very pleased to have this in front of me. It's not a garbage can. It's a composting bin, right? Okay,
yes.
I've never had this on the air here so far. But a lot of people might be wondering, okay, all of their lives, we've been throwing our food away, and it's been going into landfill, and they think decomposing, right? Why is it now – so explain why this is important to put it in here and not in your garbage can. Explain that, please.
Well, one thing that I would say is landfilling has changed over the years. And because of considerations with groundwater protection and a whole host of other environmental considerations – we have changed the technology and highly improved the technology of our landfills so that they are pretty much airtight. And they're not having all of those elements come in that would assist all those materials to complete the natural decomposition process, meaning that there actually have been mining or core samples that have been sent down into landfills, you know, the equivalent of 50 years down, and come back with fully intact packages of hot dogs, for example. Okay, so our technology is such that we want to protect our environment for all those things we throw away, but landfills really do just sort of keep adding on to themselves. So as Bill mentioned, there's a lot of richness in the material that we're throwing away from the standpoint of organic material that we can make beneficial use of. And that's what this is really all about.
Correct. It's just a much better use of it. As we look at the waste hierarchy, the EPA has put together a way of looking at material.
The Environmental Protection Agency.
Yes, mm-hmm. Thank you. And the first thing is really looking at what we're buying, how much we're buying, how we're utilizing that, how we're storing it. And that's really the first thing we want to do is buy the right amount of food, make sure that we're using the food that we buy, and if we're not, that we're getting into a better use rather than just throwing it in the landfill, whether it be giving it to a food pantry or working with other agencies to make sure it gets utilized properly. And that's really the things we want to look at, kind of work our way down the waste hierarchy. First is getting it, buying properly, storing it properly, eating it, and if not, finding alternative uses. And finally, kind of as we work down the waste hierarchy, then we get down to composting, and then last is landfill. And we're just trying to work back up that pyramid and trying to make sure we're doing the best that we can mm-hmm. with the resources. There's a lot of natural resources put into growing that food, processing that food, transporting that food mm-hmm. in the grocery store with all the air conditioning, the lights, and everything else. We buy it with good intentions. We get home, we put it in the refrigerator, and 2 weeks later we open up the refrigerator and find that moldy thing back sure. in the corner of the refrigerator that we paid money for, sure. and we just throw it away.
And then recently I've learned from the media that a lot of people throw out food too soon. They imagine it's spoiled
when goodness.
It's not.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about this, and for our listeners, it's a square, almost 5 gallon bucket lined with a plastic liner that's not really plastic, but decomposable in its own right. And, you know, we have people who live in freestanding homes in neighborhoods who are used to doing yard work. Seems to me that this would be good for people in apartments and people living without the whole idea of being composting from a gardening standpoint. Mm-hmm. But they can be aware that what they produce as waste in their own apartment is also part of the ecosystem, if we make it that way. And what I'm hearing you saying is the landfill is the final stop. Let's prevent things from getting into the landfill that don't belong there. And only the things that go into the landfill are the things that belong in the landfill, right?
That's exactly
right. That's what we're trying
right.
to talk about here.
That's exactly right. And the whole idea of beneficial use not only applies to food waste, which, of course, is what we're talking about today, but in previous discussions, we have mentioned a whole consultant study that we had done for our community based on all the things being put into the waste stream currently and more beneficial uses for them. And it's exactly to your point of looking at all the things that we may consider waste that we no longer need, but is there a beneficial use for them beyond just immediately putting them into the garbage?
Now, we've talked about what this program is, but how does it work? How do people get to take part in this program?
So that is an excellent question.
I'm paid big money to ask these excellent questions. I want you to know that. Just kidding.
Well, what you have in front of you is actually what folks would get if they wanted to buy a starter kit.
So I would get this.
You would get the bucket with the information on it. The liners or the bags that are inside, very good point that they are a specific type of compostable bag. So many things are noted as compostable, but not all things are created equally compostable considerations. So these are special bags. People can certainly go out and buy their own bags as long as they are within the parameters listed for these particular bags. Folks also don't have to use a bag if they don't want
to. They can just put it in here.
You can just put it in there. I myself like the liner. But anyway, a starter kit comes with a bucket, comes with five bags, and comes with a five punch drop-off card.
And so when it's filled, what happens? Let's say your bag is filled and you've reached your goal.
Okay. You've reached
the top of this container. Yeah, right. Yes.
And I will say, just to let people know, you can push material down and get that much more material.
You can start compacting now.
You can. Yeah. You can start your own decomposition process, and you will see it happening, certainly, in your bucket. But once it is full, there are two places currently that you can take it and you can dump it, and you can get a punch off of your punch card. And that is the Resource Recovery Center here on Center Street.
110 Center?
Yes. And
now, if you have your cards filled with punches,
yes.
Is there a reward like a Roy Rogers punch drop?
Not yet, but that is a good point.
That's a good idea.
Roy Rogers lunchbox. I love that.
Go to work on that.
I still haven't forgiven my mother for thinking my Snoopy lunchbox was trash when I got to a certain age. Anyway, so that's a great idea.
I never got beyond that age. I still have mine.
So the Resource Recovery Center is open 6 days a week.
Yes.
And Bill can rattle off the hours more effectively.
Monday through Friday, 7 to 3:30, and for Saturday, 8 to noon.
So if you consider those hours, we're out doing errands anyway. We can take our composting bucket. You go to the Resource Recovery Center. You pull into the car line, which is on the north side of the building. And one of the wonderful staff folks there will come up and help you empty your bucket, get your punch card punched, and then you can be on your way. The other place you can take it is our yard waste drop-off facility. Which remind me of that address.
400 Friel Drive.
Thank you. Excellent. We make such a great team. Thank you.
You do.
And we have drop-offs throughout the week. That facility is open.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday, noon to 5, and Saturday, 8 to noon.
Bill has all the answers.
He's got a brochure. Isn't he a smart guy that he brought a brochure with him?
Now, I notice here, because I can read with my glasses on here at this particular hour, yes and no, things you can put in here.
Yes.
And things you cannot. So I'm not going to read all of these because you're the guest, but what can you put in this particular container in general terms? Do you remember, or shall I hold this up so you can read? You guys can read it.
Well, we can tag team on it, but basically what I would say is anything that is related to food preparation that is a scrap item. So you're cutting the ends off carrots, or you're having some you cut some of the fat off of meat when you're getting ready to prepare it. All that stuff can go into here. And also anything after your meal, any food that people don't eat, you know, you've got those leftover pieces. Those can go into here. Anything, as Bill mentioned, you put in the fridge, and 2 weeks later you come back and it's all moldy. That can go into here. And then there are other things. So pet food that might be expired can go into here. Fresh flowers that are cut, and then, you know, you're done with those. Those can go into here as well. What else am I missing, Bill? Shellfish, you know, those things that are left over, the shells from the shellfish that you might have, you might get in some different dishes, carry out, or you may cook yourself. Those can go in here as well.
And then you can't have plastic of any kind.
Correct.
And you can't have aluminum foil. Think about things that will not you can't put bones in there. from your food or meat. And you can't put animal waste in there or pet litter.
Right, yeah. So no cat litter boxes. No.
And, of course, not diapers. Now, hair, that's not usable either. You can't put hair in there.
Well, how often do you have hair remains after you eat dinner, though? I mean, what are we really talking about?
At my age, hair is a valuable commodity.
It's true. It's true. That you can put into a little onion bag in the backyard, and birds will love it to help build their nest. Absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
Onion bag.
Well, so they can, get in and they can pick it out.
I see.
One of the things I...
Same with dryer lint. They love that as well.
Dryer lint?
Really? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you kind of talked about, plastics you can't put in there, but coffee grounds are good. One of the things we started talking to people about, the K-cups, little Keurig coffee cups, you can just tear the top of those off and pour the coffee grounds out and then get rid of the cup.
Yes.
So, once again, just kind of breaking stuff down.
Yes, and to Bill's point, in taking the extra time to do that with the K-cups, it's very beneficial to the resource recovery system's processing, because any organic waste that comes in is going to contaminate items that otherwise are beneficial waste to the resource recovery center. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the plastic from the K-cups is very beneficial, but grinding that up in the coffee grounds, then hitting paper and other items and contaminate them is going to pull those out of the system, and all of that stuff is going to be landfilled.
This looks like another one of those things that Ames is noted for, to your folks' credit, this progressive look at how to save the environment. The Rummage Rampage is one of those examples that you guys are very proud of, and justifiably so, and I'm still recovering from lifting all those things. But the Food Waste Diversion Program.
Yes.
This has to be innovative. I mean, we have to be in the forefront of the nation in trying something like this. Are we not? There's the tee off for you there, Mary. How far ahead are we on this one?
Well, I would say that we're approaching it in a different way. There are a number of communities that have composting efforts going on. And so I wouldn't say necessarily that we're out in front from that standpoint. But the way in which we have combined this with a waste-to-energy system and the way that we have really been approaching this in a fully comprehensive manner to address beneficial versus non-beneficial waste for a waste-to-energy system, I think does put us out there, does put us in that forward-thinking realm. So each community is so very different in their challenges, in their opportunities, in the resources in front of them, and in their demographics. We are in a really unique place in Ames because over half of our population is students, so they're here for a while and gone for a while. They definitely don't have their own homes for the most part, and have their backyards where they can compost. And so this is certainly very forward thinking from a standpoint of how do you address all of that population that is only here for a certain amount of time, certainly consumes and certainly produce a lot of waste. How do you put a system in place that they feel is affordable, they feel is convenient, and they feel is something that they can do? And that's where I think we really have struck upon something. But it's important to mention this is a pilot right now. So we have put this out. We want to see how it goes. We want to get feedback from folks. We want to get their comments, their thoughts, do sort of a SWOT analysis plus delta analysis, and then see where we move forward with it. I don't imagine it will go away, but we can certainly look at refinements.
Well, I think that probably you're in the forefront in terms of going back to apartment dwellers, because people live in a separate unit house. They're already tuned in maybe to gardening, raking the yard, composting, and participating in whatever composting programs existed before. But apartment dwellers don't think of themselves as part of that ecosystem because they're not living on a plot of ground. And so look at when I would drive around Ames and Des Moines, actually, the proclivity of being in an apartment is very predominant.
Yes.
And so it brings all these people in to participating in composting. And I think that you're probably in the forefront of that effort. You're to be complimented on that. Now, I've also read that in some areas you can be donating your body to be composted.
Yes.
And I have this horrible dream that the only thing left in me would be my favorite tie, you know.
Mary, I'm afraid if we started
there might be
doing
some plastics in there, so yeah, we would need to look at that.
If we started doing that, though, you'd have to bring in a much bigger container, I'm afraid. So I don't just
well, I can be compressed eventually.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
This is getting morbid around.
It really is. Mary, but in terms of the college students now, is this going to be a tough sell? Because, I mean, some of those folks, they're living in dorms, they're living in apartments. How do you get them involved?
So we were actually at Welcome Fest talking about mm-hmm. this. We had these Pails at Rummage Rampage. We have been in a number of different community events. And, in fact, our local food festival at Iowa State is going to be taking part on September 25th. And we're excited to have Bill and his team bring some of these composting bins and talking about the program. So it's just getting awareness out there. But I tell you, students are very interested in this.
We've had students stop by and buy the pails.
Yes.
Oh, really?
They really want to be involved with it. They really want to be a part of the solution. And they see this as a very viable option.
I actually think the college population will be more likely to sign on than other people, maybe, because the young people are so aware. They want to be part of the solution. Now, when you're my age, and Dirt is a little older than I am, I really have seen a tremendous change in how we see sustainability. And I date it from the first trips to the moon when the astronauts photographed the Earth. And you look back, you saw this blue marble planet of blue and green and everything. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, you saw this thin veneer of atmosphere. That's when we began to think that we are living in an envelope that has to be sustained.
Yes.
And you two are the avant-garde people taking care of that issue.
Yes.
So congratulations to Mary
goodness.
And Bill.
Wow, how's that for praise, too? Now, I noticed that we have a couple of minutes left. We're almost out of time. That one of the corners here appears to be chewed by what appears to be an animal. And I'm going to guess it's not a raccoon or a squirrel. It's a dog,
It's a dog. My dog took an incredible liking to my compost bin. So
really?
I would just let everybody know that it can be an incredibly inviting potential chew toy, particularly for Black Labrador or other larger dogs.
So it's a good idea to seal that.
Yes. Or put it into a different area, maybe, of the house.
What is the dog's name?
His name is Drew.
Drew. Oh,
yes.
Okay. He put his teeth into this one.
He really did, indeed. Now, I would mention that the starter kit, the cost is $20 for all that we mentioned. But you can come and you can buy a punch card and get bags for $10.
Correct.
And then that bucket can be used for a long time.
Oh, correct. My goodness, yes. That's the intent, is that we've got a reusable item that, my goodness, it should be the life of the amount of time you need for
your compost
bin. And
if you have your own buckets that you want to use, you can bring that in, and we'll just charge you $2 to dump it.
So where can people sign up?
You don't have to have the official bucket.
No,
you don't.
No.
It can't be unofficial. But if you do, it certainly lets you know what you should and shouldn't be putting in.
Where can people get this, and how can they sign up? Where can they go?
That's an excellent question.
I'm paid to ask these excellent questions.
You guys are doing such fabulously.
Currently, we're selling them at three different locations. We have them at the Resource Recovery Plant, 110 Center Avenue. You can just stop in anytime we're open, Monday through Friday, 7 to 3:30 and 8 to noon on Saturday. We also have them the Yardway site on 400 Friel Drive. And surprisingly, most of them we've been selling have been at the Community Center at City Hall. Okay. Right there at the gymnasium.
Wow. They've
sold over 50 of them for us already.
Cool.
So it is great.
We're out of time. Thank you two for coming in.
Thank you so much. And more information, City of Ames website, right on the front slider, there's a picture of one of our composting bins. You can click for more information. And as Bill mentioned, if backyard composting is something you're interested in, we have a rebate program going on for getting those bins that you get to choose as a homeowner and citizen and take part in that. And I do a little bit of both, personally. So,
Mary and Bill, always a pleasure having you two here. Let's do it again next month. What do you say?
Let's do that. That'd be excellent.
Sounds great. Thank you.
You have been listening to Local Talk Friday. I'm your lowly paid host, one of them, Dennis Hart.
And I'm Paul Wearson. Local Talk also airs today at noon and 5 p.m. here on KHOI, right here at 89.1 FM. And you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org. as well as finding links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, come on down. We'll train you. give you a composting bucket. Come on down and join the local talk team.
And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio. Have a great weekend.
Support for KHOI is provided in part by Stevens Auditorium, presenting Cirque May, Wednesday, October 2nd at 7 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu. Support for KHOI is provided in part by Stevens Auditorium, presenting The Kingdom Choir, Monday, October 7th at 7 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
So, President Trump, you've spent the last 2.5 years full-time trying to sow hate and division among us.
That was California Senator Kamala Harris, who during last night's Democratic debate focused on standing out as someone who can take on incumbent President Donald Trump. There are 2 points candidates need to make in a primary debate, according to Drake University professor Dennis Goldford.
The candidate, first of all, has to make the point that the incumbent is not doing the job, is not up to doing the job, and must be replaced. The second point, which is I'm the best person by virtue of experience and qualifications and campaign strategy to beat the incumbent president.
Harris wasn't alone in pointed attacks on the president. Former Texas Representative Beto O'Rourke said what he called the president's racism affected his hometown of El Paso, which experienced a deadly mass shooting earlier this summer. But then we come to Goldford's second point, where each one of these candidates needed to stand out not only as someone who could beat Trump, but as someone who has a better vision than anyone else on stage. Frontrunner Biden and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren shared the debate stage for the first time. She pushed her populist message, taking on corruption and multinational corporations, refraining from direct attacks on Biden. It was former Housing Secretary Julian Castro that really took him on.
You said they would have to buy in.
To buy in, if she qualifies.
Are you forgetting what you said 2 minutes ago? Every time something good about Barack Obama comes up, he says, "Oh, I was there, I was there, I was there." And then every time somebody questions part of the administration that we were both part of, he says, "Well, that was the president."
I stand with Barack Obama all 8 years, good, bad, and indifferent.
Biden defended his health care plan, saying some people might prefer their private health insurance to a public option, and scoffed at Sanders' position that employers would increase wages with savings from employee health care.
My friend Vermont thinks that the employer is going to give you back if you negotiate his union all these years, got a cut in wages because you got insurance. They're going to give back that money to the employee?
Matter of fact, they will.
Well, let me tell you something. For a socialist, you got a lot more confidence in corporate America than I do.
In contrast, entrepreneur Andrew Yang took a different tack, focusing primarily on his ideas. He wants to dilute the power of special interest lobbies and millionaire donors with proposals like giving every American a publicly funded voucher of $100 to contribute to their favorite candidates and a universal basic income.
There's the people on one side and the money on the other. The only way for us to win is if we bring them together.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.